Hello and welcome everybody to the American Soccer Analysis Show. I am your host, Kieran, and I'm joined by Harrison Homie Crow and Benjamin the Beacon Bellman. Gentlemen, how are you doing on this fine day?
Dude, it's fine.
Harrison,
It's a little warm up in the Northwest. Like it's like almost 70 degrees. I don't know how to handle this.
It was 100 degrees here the last 2 weeks,
yeah.
and it's like 55 today, so I'm pretty
Oh
mad.
my god.
Same here. We had a 75 degree day, and I was like, we can open the windows. Oh my god.
I haven't had to turn on my AC unit for a while, and so I like my office like just kind of hot boxes because I have so much like I have so much equipment in here. Like I have a server and I have my laptops and I have my computer. And so like for the most part, like I say hot box, I probably should be careful to specify.
A literal temperature
right.
Warming,
yes.
An incubator more than a hot box.
Yes. Thank you. Incubator, not a hot box. Yes,
if any
exactly.
Potential sponsors are listening, an incubator. Well, today, other than the weather, is a fun day because today is the day that the MLS analytics survey dropped. It went out this morning. It'll be yesterday by the time you're hearing this episode. And this is one of our favorite things at ASA. And I think it's actually it's really cool because you see this in other sports, but like soccer doesn't really have this. And MLS is very unique in that, like, it's a collective league. It's very different than other leagues. So you have a lot more like go between the teams. And like there are shared league wide data deals, for example, the Sportech deal, which we'll talk about. So
it's
teams
much
are
more of a community, right?
for sure.
Yeah, I feel like it's much more community driven than it is any other league or any other sport right now.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And
yeah,
and
sure.
I think teams are probably broadly more aware of what other teams are doing in MLS than in, say, the Premier League, because everybody knows everybody. Like, the famously, like, Devin and Ravi used to send a calculator back and forth for whoever won MLS Cup. Like, that's a cool thing that, like,
yeah.
I cannot imagine, like, any of the Arsenal analysts, like, what's the guy who invented expected threat? I can't remember his name right now. I'm totally blanking.
Oh.
The expected threat guy who's at Arsenal. Like, I don't imagine like he is sending stuff to the City Football Group.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think he's sending them a calculator to congratulate them on winning the league.
Well, the other side is like, I mean, we used to have not just, I say we colloquial because like I went once, but like during some of the different conferences and stuff, they would all get together. Like that was like a huge meeting of the minds.
Yep.
That was, and not just like MLS, but just like soccer analytics enthusiasts, right? It was just like, hey, we're going to meet at a bar and we're all going to talk. And, you know, so it wasn't just that they knew each other by way of their jobs. Like this was something that, you know, they knew mm-hmm. each other back as Devin was with New England and just an intern with New England. And they just knew each other from, hey, this is kind of what I'm interested in. And hey, you're interested too. And we're going to publish our works out on the internet and stuff. And it just kind of grows from there. And I feel like, you know, that's been one of the cool things about being at ASA is that we've been so connected with so many people starting their careers that we've been lucky enough to kind of see people grow into those positions and be a part of that. And so because of that, and I want to make it clear, like none of us here on the podcast know anything about any of the conversations that happen in putting this together. Elliot kind of keeps that very he very much keeps
yeah, he
that
locks
confidential.
It down.
Like that stuff that he doesn't let out of the vault. So like we don't know about it. No one knows about it. So this is all pretty confidential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Karun Singh was the person I was talking about.
Yeah,
with expected threat.
Thank you, Karun Singh. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. If but Karun's listening, I don't think he is, but sorry.
Yeah, we're not the British soccer. Well, British football podcast.
I believe he's American, but that's okay.
Is he? Okay. Well,
yeah.
He's gone to the other side. I think part of it too is just like the. I mean, we've got our friends John and Teodal doing
the
podcast, sort of documenting all this. Like, it really is. These ideas are communal ideas in such a profound way. So, I think there's always going to be that friendly competitive edge, but also okay, we sort of created this scene together, but now we have to hide it. We have to assess each other. One club is assessing the skills of another club. I'm like, oh, we've got an edge, but maybe they're catching up. Or, oh man, they're so far ahead. We really got to sink our resources into this. Like, it really drives both ends of that, which is such a cool aspect.
So let's get into the actual like results and some of the questions that were asked. So the first two were who are the most analytically advanced and who are the least analytically advanced. I think we can start at the top is probably the best place to go. TFC have the most number of first place votes, which is 14. Only 21 teams returned the survey of the I believe we contacted 24 because there are six who don't have a dedicated analytics staffer. 21 of 24 replied, and 14 of those 21 said TFC were the most advanced, or one of the five most advanced. Red Bulls, Sounders, Columbus, and Ben's beloved Colorado all in the top five. Nashville and Philly sharing the same tied for fifth place. Anybody stand out as surprising in either direction there? Either you think like they're not, they should be in that bracket and aren't, or you think are in that bracket and shouldn't be?
I have one, and that's Columbus. Columbus, I don't feel like it doesn't they don't always stand out to me as being a big analytic team. I mean, I guess we understand a lot of their teams. Brett Myers is a consultant. We understand, their team and their structure and everything considers that highly, especially coming from Toronto. Most of that front office coming from Toronto, that's already, but that's something that I guess I kind of forget about and I don't think about. Really, it is how well, Crew, they're a really great coach team, and sometimes you don't always associate great coaching with a team that has a lot of structure throughout that whole organization.
Yeah, the Crew stood out to me as well, because I think one of the things that's really important to stress for some of these things is like this question is not asking who incorporates analytics the best. Because like TFC are number one here. I can tell
Toronto,
you for
right?
a fact, TFC are not incorporating analytics into their processes that well. They do, however, have a very strong analytics department. Like Devin has built out Devin Pooler, who was at TFC for a long time and is now at MLSE, the like parent corp of TFC. They have built out a very strong analytics operation, but I do not think the club incorporates analytics that well. Whereas I think the Crew are perhaps the opposite, where like we don't really hear many things about like fancy models or something crazy the Crew have behind the scene. What we do see is like Laurent Courtois is looking at game flows, and we see that Wilfred Nancy is interested in analytics, and we know that Bez is considering the numbers, and you look at some of the signings they're making and you're like, these guys are probably working this into their recruiting somehow. Another team who I think is like clearly is working this in, and Ben, I'd be curious, and like feel free to like bow out of whatever questions you can't answer, but like the Rapids show up really high here. And we dropped the tier list last week. Like the Rapids are one of two teams in tier zero where Fran Taylor is like previously a stat DNA guy. And so is that surprising for you to see them there? Is that not surprising?
I think it's, I'm not surprised by either, because they're top. I don't like I know Devin has such a reputation. I know Ravi had such a reputation when he was at Seattle. I know all his work's still there, that I think that seems about right, just based on where I sense the other analysts would place Colorado. But they're it's 100%. They are, I would say, the most analytically influenced, just from, talking with Fran a couple of times, just from seeing the types of move they make. Like, who else in this league is going to trade for Kevin Cabral? Like, I think that's an analytics move. It really is. Like, he's got great underlying numbers, and the ball doesn't get quite in the net, but if you're getting the value, that's what you're trading for. So that all definitely makes sense to me. What
Especially
I
if LA is going to pick up a huge amount of
yeah.
his stuff, right?
So I mean, you're not gonna do that if it's the full contract, but now you're doing the money ball thing a little bit. So it's clearly there in the strategy. I think, like, I've peeked under the hood of Colorado, having done some work with them. I haven't peeked under the hood of any other team, so I can't speak to like the level of stuff that they've done apart from, things I've heard from other people. The one I know Nashville have like they've had an analyst for a while, at least two, right? They're in tier one, I believe, for the analytics tiers. I can you remind me where they placed on the in like the influence side? I forget.
Yeah, Nashville are a tier one, and they have the same number of most advanced votes as Colorado and Philadelphia, with seven.
And then like that's where I'm curious, because it's like, you know, they just got rid of Gary Smith, who, I having been a Colorado fan during his tenure, he didn't strike me as the most statistically inclined coach. And we, you know, there's some running jokes in the Slack of, oh, Nashville did another cross, and we know crosses are not a very efficient way of getting goals. So I think it's fair to say that the game model wasn't very influenced by analytical thinking either. I'm curious to see where it goes now, because they need to replace the coach. The organization seems to prioritize data. So now I'm curious to see if that will be built into their ethos going forward more cleanly with the product on the field.
Yeah, Nashville have famously been one of the clubs with like an army of intern analysts, unpaid intern analysts, I believe. But yeah, I mean, like the famous anecdote that like kind of has gone around the ASA Slack that like I think I can say now because I'm not gonna say who said it, is that when Nashville were looking at fullbacks and ended up with Shaq Moore, a like key determinant in that was that he had a higher crossing completion percentage in Spain. And like Gary Smith was like super about like, oh, Shaq Moore is gonna be this offensive crossing weapon. But like you could have dug into Shaq Moore's data and like Shaq Moore does nothing going forward, which is like what has happened. And they're paying a lot of money for a right back who doesn't do anything. So, yes, I agree with you. I'm very curious. And I do think this is actually kind of like fits the larger point of like a lot of how much your club invests into analytics and MLS is like very tied to your head coach's opinions of it. Like the Galaxy, we can shift to the bottom half of this. The Galaxy are a team who get six least advanced votes, despite having a very analytics friendly GM and being very into it. But Greg Vanney doesn't really care. Like he's not an analytics inclined guy. And you see the same thing, like Sporting Kansas City are there, Portland are there. Like these are not super analytically inclined clubs. I will say the team who surprised me in the bottom is I'm kind of surprised that people were ragging on Minnesota so much. We've heard that like they are consulting, they have a consultancy agreement with somebody. So they're like ahead of some of the other teams like Dallas, who like we don't know anything about, and also just fired their coach. St. Louis fans were really mad because like they have 14 guys who are like academy coaches and also a video analyst, and it's like that's not a data person.
Well, and that's one thing that we've heard a lot about. I just from our dealings from various sources, we know Minnesota's wanted to invest in this, not just this year. This isn't recent. Over the last couple years, that's been a priority of their organization, is looking and investing in analytics. And so, yeah, they ended up in tier two, but it's a little surprise. It was a little surprising for them to end up at the bottom of this. I think Dallas also ending up at the bottom of this after them not being twofold. They had people, you know, they had Armin beforehand. They've had a really great developmental pipeline, and that's what a lot of people have kind of said. We actually got a tweet about that, asking us, how can you be so good at developing and so bad with data? And it's kind of funny that those two don't necessarily go hand in hand in so many different ways. Did you have any thoughts on that, Kieran?
Yeah, so the tweet that Harrison's referencing was from Messi in America, a parody account. Why is FC Dallas so poor when they have such a good reputation for player development and advancement? You would think that they'd have an appreciation for the numbers game inherent in analytics and would be applying that on the player development, acquisition, and game analysis fronts. And it's a good question because there's two parts of this. Like, why are Dallas good at developing players when they seemingly don't use data? And from what we know, like Dallas have historically not been a super data-driven franchise. As you mentioned, they had Armin Cafai, who has left the club since then. and who's been writing like really awesome pieces over at Backyield, which I would highly recommend you go check out. But that's kind of the crux of it is like, how can you develop players good without using data? But also there's like the bigger question of like, how do you use data to develop players? And I think that's a really interesting point because Sean, Stefan, and I have talked about this a lot, where like one of the biggest gains that I have seen coaching is like teaching young players about XG. And I don't mean like this shot was 0.04. Like, I mean the concept of like what makes shots valuable. Because like inherently, every decision a player makes is like operating off of a possession value model in their head. They just don't know it. But
Right,
like
100%.
if a player is choosing to take someone on, it's because they think that them doing that is going to increase the probability that they will score on this possession. Or if they clear it out of their end, it's because it's decreasing the opponent's probability of scoring in this position or whatever. But every decision they make is like, are we going to be more likely to score in this possession or less likely to concede in the next one? That's every decision every player is making. For most of the players, they just don't know that. So when you formalize that kind of value-based and like probabilistic thinking in players, you can see huge gains. Like you can see attackers who like I've told this story before. I can't remember if I told it on the pod. We had a winger who was like a NCAA D1, like pretty good player, went to the States and like shit the bed. Like she just did not perform at all in the States at like a pretty good program. Came back to Canada and was like kind of wanted to start fresh and like she was super talented, but like she would get within 30 yards of goal and just like let it rip. And that was the only decision that was in her like arsenal. And so we sat down for all of preseason and like probably did like 2 hours of film and like explaining how the math on some of these things work. And like she played 4 years for us. She was an All-Canadian. She was All-Star every single season. She's like in with a shout, like she might end up in this Northern Super League that's starting up in Canada. Like these are like legitimate developmental gains to be had, and that's just one anecdotal story, but like you can imagine talking to 14-year-old academy players and explaining like this is what makes shots valuable, and you don't even have to give them any more information than that. But think about like, okay, the next time you watch them, what decisions do they make in the final third? Defensively, what decisions do they make? Like, all of these things are tied to like basic soccer concepts. Like, if you are a center back and you're 1v1 with an attacker, are you going to force them inside towards the goal or outside away from the goal? Well, why? Because we know wider, it's a worse angle, the chance of scoring is much lower, right? Like, analytics is just a computer that watched all of the games. So like when we are teaching these things, we're just teaching them soccer.
We're averaging
And
out
so
the eye test and turning those into concepts. Yeah, I think that's like a that's a really I that's one angle on it. It's like how do you inform an academy structure and a developmental structure using what we know about the game from analytics, like those insights that are data driven rather than, the stuff that you see on crap 90s football Twitter account. Like we ran the models to optimize this. So now we're in a position to actually train players in an optimal way. I'm also thinking about this in terms of like, I've still come back to MLS, like MLS clubs use data for recruiting. You will save so much money on bad signings just paying an analyst $100,000 a year to do your recruiting and vet everything and bring you things. I feel like we can do this. Data is not there in some ways, but I think we can do this for prospects too. Like we have a more integrated academy system developing with MLS Next. We have like data on neighborhoods that we can use to sort of find like where are prospects coming from? What kind of neighborhoods do they come from? What is it about American society that tends to create good soccer players? Like, why is New Jersey swimming with men's players? Why is Colorado swimming with women's players? Like, there are insights to be gathered here. So I hope that that can also become a new front of data in the academy and in the player development sphere as well.
I think that's a really unique angle, and I know that's like aligned with your professional
Yeah,
life, right?
I'm a nerd like that.
And that I think is like a huge thing. And I think I'm glad that you highlighted Next Pro, because I think this is a really unique thing about MLS compared to other leagues, is that like the U21 Premier League has pretty robust data. And then Next Pro has great data, but other than that, and UEFA Youth League has pretty good data, and that's about it. There's not a ton of really good youth soccer data out there. I mean, like having the ability to see these players throughout their developmental pipeline, like we can plot now in G Plus, like we have like pretty significant development curves of like players who were playing Next Pro or were playing for the USL, the MLS reserve teams in USL. Like we can see every single season they played from 16 to 25. Like that's crazy. So I think like in terms of answering this person's question, we didn't really answer it. Like, how are they good at doing this stuff, even though they don't care about data? I don't know. Maybe they just have really good youth coaches in their academy. It's fairly reasonable. But I
I think
think in
so,
terms,
there's soft skills too, right? Like, I mean, like kind of Ben touched on it a little bit. We're not necessarily disregarding soft skills, right? We're using
no.
data to help concepts, to help, show other another way of showing concepts and just manufacturing how that's real and how we're teaching those things, right? It's just another tool in teaching and learning.
And I think that's like a really valid point, especially when we're talking about youth development. Like, well, most MLS academies, they kind of vary from club to club, but most MLS academies, the youngest age group is like 12 or 13. And you have like kids who are coming in at 13 and who are going all the way up to your first team at 21. And like, you think about the development they go through as people, let alone as players, like put all the like technical skills and tactical knowledge and physical development, put all that aside. Like, you are taking children and they come out as young men or young women on the women's side. Like it's the player development, the like social development, all that stuff is critical to youth development. Like Chelsea used to, Neil Bath is like Chelsea's academy director, and he used to have all these like really cool stories about how they would want a player to develop specific personality traits, and they would pick their loans. Like if they had a player who was like a bit of a like a mama's boy, they would send them far away from home because they'd be like, you have to do a little bit of growing up. Like you have to cook for yourself and like learn to live alone in this flat in the north of England. And the same way
Interesting.
that if they had like whatever, they had players who needed to like they needed a coddle, like they needed a softer touch, like they would send them here because that was better for them. And so it's all these things really matter. And
Oh,
it's a
for
little bit
sure.
away from traditional analytics, but I think there's a lot of scope for use of data in the player development sphere for sure.
Yeah, agreed.
Any other takes from the most advanced, least advanced? I really like the teams who end up with votes for both categories that are in the middle. That's my favorite. One team who turned up there is Inter Miami. I think somebody, one of the quotes that was in the article was, I don't know how things have changed since Sam Gregory, who's now at US Soccer, has left Miami, but they were doing some pretty cool stuff while he was the director there. And I think this is true of a lot of the MLS teams, that their analytics work is very tied to the people they have. And when those people leave, it's quite hard to replace some of them. And I think TFC has seen this with Devin, and I think some other teams have seen this, but it is not easy to find these people.
Well, and not only that, but you look at some of the organizations that they've had to replace those people, and you can tell that there's a gap. I mean, no disrespect to Seattle and some of the things that they've had to do. Look, trying to replace Robbie is really bad. It was really difficult. And Tyler Cox coming back in, he's picked up the baton, but it took I'm sure how he does things is different than how Robbie did things. And while they're both considered are very well respected within their fields, how they do things and how they implement those things are going to be completely different. And the turnover time, I'm sure that there's, I mean, I'm in that process right now, right? Professionally. The way we do things we both have our own idiosyncrasies. We have our own ways about executing. We have our own ideas of how we want to do things. They're not bad. It's not, it's, they're not competing ideologies, but how you execute those things is just different. And organizationally, you just kind of have to learn to how we're going to integrate those new ideas in and start having those data flows. You know, we hear that from a lot of different organizations, that getting that structure of the data flows into the decision making is difficult. And we know that in Seattle that they have that, but I'm sure that adding Tyler and bringing Tyler into that was difficult. I think Inter Miami is a really interesting one because they still have some semblance of that structure still there with Jordan. I don't know how much it's still there, but you can see in the decision making with their how they've picked up players. Yeah, the Messi and friends. Okay, they had the Messi and friends. Cool. That's the the Reddit meme of them being on this. But they've also gone and collected roster collection from other sources, right? They went and they've used the super draft. They've gone and they've collected free agents. So I think Inter Miami is deservedly there, and I'm interested to see what they do over the next year, especially as Messi and friends leaves the team.
Yeah, we've talked about like their very smart cap management. Even like Leo Afonso scored the winner this weekend, who like Paul Harvey flagged up using Davies, which is basically just G plus on event on aggregate data, not event data, that Leo Afonso was the best player in the entire draft. And he's been very good for Miami. So moving on, the next question that came up in the survey was who are the most analytically influenced? So these are teams who are like actually using it. I don't think we have to talk about this one that much. It's kind of all the same teams minus Toronto. The Rapids show up as number one with 4 votes, and then the Crew, Union, Red Bulls, Sounders all have 2. I kind of think the Red Bulls get a little bit of short shrift because they've been so analytically inclined for so long that people don't really care about them anymore. They're doing a lot of good work. Sam Goldberg, ex-ASA, is over there in MLS, but they've got the whole multi-club network and that whole thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you guys. What do you think about Atlanta being on this list?
I think this is actually a very good question and a very excellent segue, Harrison. I think you should host this show. Atlanta fired their coach. And Atlanta have a very interesting relationship with analytics because the first Atlanta team, which was very good, had a number of analytics staffers. Lucy Rushton, probably most noteworthy among them, who ended up being the GM at DC and is now the GM at Bay FC and NWSL. And that team like hit a bunch of dingers. Like they were Vladdy Guerrero in his peak, just hitting. They hit on Almiron, they hit on Joseph, they hit on Villalba. And since then, they have decidedly not hit on most decisions they've made. And it's been a lot of spending huge money on South American wingers that have been like just okay. And they have somehow gotten out of it with most of their money on most of them. But now they've got a few staffers. They've brought in Lagerwey from Seattle. They have Arjun Bellarmine, who's an ASA alumnus. Akshay Aswaran, who's in the ASA Discord. And Sarah Rudd and formerly Robbie. Robbie's no longer working with Source, but Source Football as their consultancy. So like they've got a lot of different angles to it. I don't know, because on one hand I'm like, that's actually a very solid analytics staff, and I think Lagerwey is very eager to incorporate data into his processes. However, they still have a lot of South American wingers that aren't that good, and I don't know. What do you think?
I think they need to, I think it now is the time to replace their general manager. And I think it now is the time for them to transition. Garth Lagerwey is he's a great executive. he's a very good executive. I think the idea of how much he gets into the day-to-day is overblown. I think a lot of the stuff that he did for Seattle, the good stuff that he did for Seattle nationwide is miscast and misjudged. He did amazing things for Seattle, but what he did was build pipelines. He orchestrated the academy and rebuilt what Seattle had as an infrastructure. And that's what he'll will be his forever legacy. But the players that he went and got, you know, that's on Chris Henderson. Like that's on the actual football team. And he was very hands off of that. And that was something that he was very, at least it seemed like he was very transparent about, was that's the football side of the house. I'm doing something completely different. And I kind of actually expected Atlanta to do, I'm still waiting for them to do more from their academy side. The South has so many great prospects that we've seen come from there. I think that we're going to see a lot more come from their academy over the next few years. I think there's going to be a lot more investment when it comes to that. I think that's what Lagerwey does. I think it's time for him to replace and find a GM that syncs with him and then have him hire his head coach and whoever he wants to be the director of football. I think that's what they need to do right now. And I think that's what Lagerwey needs to do.
Go ahead, Ben.
I mean, I think that makes sense, because I think my angle here is, and the reason why I think it's right that Colorado is at the top of this is you have your models, you've got your code, you've got your databases, and then you've got your relationships. And when I look at what Seattle had been until Garth left and until Chris Henderson left, you know, Ravi, them, they had been there for years. And that's why they worked so well together. You know, if you look at Colorado, you know, Horig was promoted to club executive in, I think, end of 2017, going into 2018. One of his first hires after that was Fran. They hired Matt Pfeffer, who started as data analyst and is now director of analytics, late 2019, I believe. And so they've been together as a crew for many years now. When they fired Robin, it's because Robin was not rowing in the same direction. They had constructed a roster to play energetic, pressy ball, and Robin wanted to play slow possession, move the chess pieces around the board. So I think that makes sense in terms of what is going on with Atlanta. I think there's a disconnect between what the pipelines are leading into and who is making the decisions. And I don't know anything about the club, but I feel like that disconnect is going to have to be solved before there can be a real direction with the team.
I think you make a really good point in terms of who is making decisions versus who is doing the quote unquote analytics work. I'll throw back to we did an interview with Nikos Overhaul from formerly of Whitecaps and is now back in Europe. Last season, which was awesome, one of my favorite episodes we ever did. And Nikos talked about kind of what a lot of those processes look like, but also what a decision-making structure that incorporates analytics actually looks like. He gave the example of incentivized contracts. So if you want your coach to make more subs, you put a bonus in their contract so that if subs play more minutes, they get money. That's how this works. You want, I can't remember if he said it in that interview or I read it somewhere else, but Midtjylland, the famous Moneyball team in
Denmark.
Scandinavia. Yeah, he just went for Scandinavia because I couldn't remember if it was Denmark or Norway. in Denmark, they want their subs to keep scoring goals, so they reward sub goals. This is a thing that comes up, right? So, it's tough when you put those processes together. And as Scratch But Don't Sniff said on Reddit, the only problem is they make me think my team should be better, which makes the losing worse. So hey, you can do lots of analytics and still suck at soccer.
Well, I mean, analytics, right? If your processes are broken, and Ben nailed it, right? If your processes are broken, you're consuming information, but you're not applying it in the right manner, right? It's not garbage in, garbage out, but it's garbage. It's information in, and then applying it, which it creates garbage, right? Because yeah, they have some really talented players. You can watch them and think, wow, this is a really talented roster. But like what Ben said, if you're playing in a manner in which it's constructed very in a specific to be in a very specific way and to be executed in a way, well, then it's not going to work. And you're going to have frustration, you're going to have problems.
For sure. The next question that got asked in the survey was about underrated and overrated players. I don't think there's that much to talk about here because nobody got more than two votes.
Come on,
But
this is like we talk about this,
there are
we
some
talk about
juices.
these players so frequently, and it made me feel so good and justified.
So,
Like, I loved
so
it.
a couple names who turned up on the underrated list that I think were that fit with our ethos. Ali Ahmed came up. Whitecaps home, not homegrown, but domestic midfielder. Gaston Brugman, who always shows up as a G
Brugman, we
plus,
love him.
G plus loves Brugman. Matt Freese, who's having an unbelievable XG season. Robin Laud, Adalberto Carrasquilla, Christian Espinoza is somebody who we do not have the time to get into his data and what his data says
We have to have
versus
Jamin
what.
in. We're gonna have to have Jamin for that conversation. I like
There is an hour and a half podcast about Christian Espinoza and his
that's
XA and what is going on with that guy.
that's a that's a that's like a brown bag special ASA podcast
Oh
with
yeah,
Jamin.
a brown liquor special to steal from the old ETR days. That's I don't know if I have enough in my cupboard for that. On the most overrated side, Georgi Mihailovic. I'm kind of surprised. That feels a little bit harsh. Like I think he's good and people think he's good. I don't think anybody thinks much more than that.
I would agree with that,
John Tolkien, Kellen Acosta is a favorite punching bag of ours. Pedro Galese, who has never been really much more than an average. Boupenza, I'm surprised to see on here, but I guess he's suspended for a silly thing. Pulido, Velasco are off the punching bags. Enzo Capetti, Facundo Torres, Hany Mukhtar, Driussi, Walker Zimmerman, Jerdan Shaqiri should be have 20 votes.
I can't believe
Oh,
Pulido
does
didn't
anyone
have
rate him
more
anymore?
multiple.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know if Shaqiri is going to be an MLS
He
player
might just
by.
be rated.
Yeah, he might. You're not wrong. Next one. With the league data provider transitioning from Opta and Second Spectrum to Sportech, how satisfied are you with this partnership? I'm going to pull back the curtain on this one because this one is like a favorite of ours for a few reasons. So first off, of everyone who answered to this question, 12 of 16 are unsatisfied. 3 of 16 are very unsatisfied. Sorry, 17. And one is neutral, and one person is happy with the quality of Sportech data. And why do we care about this? Why should people who watch MLS care about like a data provider? So there's a few things. 2 years ago, MLS was working with Second Spectrum. Second Spectrum did the NBA, they did a few other things. The quality of Second Spectrum data was exceptionally high. We were very lucky that Second Spectrum gave us access to their platform so we could write and talk about the league using tracking data. If you remember, like the really cool article Elliot wrote about celebrations and like who runs the most of the field for celebrations, like that was a Second Spectrum derived piece of content. And the league decided to move away from Second Spectrum to Sportech. I don't know why. I would assume cost because the league is cheap. And we have heard nothing but terrible things since the second it started. We don't see any of this data, so obviously that sucks. And a thing that I think is really unfortunate for fans is that like there is a lot of really, really cool information that makes you smarter about soccer if this stuff is easily accessible. And one of the really nice things about Second Spectrum is they had an unbelievably accessible platform. You did not need to know one single scrap of Python or R to access like really, really unique tracking insights. And this sounds like a Second Spectrum commercial, and it is. I wish.
He has money though.
I wish. But it's generally it's an awesome product. And like when you're talking about commentators, like I mute the Apple commentary a lot, and I love the Apple TV product, but I mute it a lot because I'm just like not getting anything from this most of the time. And like I don't enjoy the Celsius heat map, and I don't care about their terrible XG model. I would be way happier if
Terrible.
they had second spectrum stuff baked into it. Like you look at how cool, like to me, like you think about the NBA finals just ended, and like you have commentators being like, well, the Mavericks generated the most wide open corner threes as per the tracking data in the first three rounds of the playoffs, and they've only generated two in the first three games of the final series. And you're like, oh my God, Boston are doing a really good job of not giving wide open corner threes. Like that's an awesome nugget you get from the coverage of the game that is tracking data informed. And like, we're not getting that in MLS. We're not getting like, well, the SportPick data tells us that Hany Mukhtar receives with the most space in the box of any player. And like, that's a thing you could find from Second Spectrum. So this I think is really disappointing. There's nothing you can do about it, but you are all missing out. That's my big takeaway from this
Well,
question.
and not just that, but man, like you look over at I'll use baseball as an instance because a lot of umpire discussions are happening right now with Angel Hernandez retiring and stuff. It's kind of crazy how many different data companies have trouble actually identifying what is a ball and what is a strike, because on a couple of these different tracking softwares, it can be a strike. And then in others, it'll be a ball. And the reason for that is the error percentage. And then also they do the strike zone a little bit different. These are problems that we see in our soccer data when we start cleaning data. And that's something that a couple people mentioned on the forum was, look, after you clean it and after you go through all this, yeah, it's really useful, but you have to go through all of that and you have to start stripping it and you have to give it its own context and you have to go through, look, if you just have a platform that is very transparent in how it operates and it gives you all of that already, like then you don't have to do any cleaning and it becomes like what you just said, Kieran, it becomes approachable. It's just missing out on and having to combat other people's definitions is so frustrating and taxing.
Ben, was the second spectrum real in effect when you were at Colorado?
Yes, there was second spectrum data coming in. I think it was that was the last year of the deal.
Did you like it? Did you like how much
Yeah.
peel back the curtain for us a little bit here, because we're going to get to this. Like, there's a question later on, does your team use raw player tracking data to create proprietary in-house metrics? And most of the team said yes. Like, how were Colorado when you were there? What you can say, like
Not much.
how are teams using tracking data?
I'm gonna have to plead the fifth on some of that, but what I will talk about is you I because I did get my hands on the raw tracking stuff a bit. I much, much A lot of what I was doing was just building new columns, so I was doing a little bit of that in-house metric building myself. But what I would say is Colorado uses the data how I would use the data. I can't speak
Okay.
to any other team than that.
So Colorado using it right. Okay, how
Colorado
about let
knows
me
how to use tracking data. I
let
can
me
vouch.
let me lawyer this up and rephrase it in a way you can answer. Like, do you feel that tracking data is impactful at clubs?
Yes, if it's happening at Colorado, it must be impactful at other clubs. So I would say that's probably the biggest. The three very unsatisfied are probably those clubs that really relied on detailed tracking data, and this switch blew up their workflows beyond comprehension. That is my assumption on who those teams were and why those analysts have that opinion. The second spectrum data was just amazing. Like you had the player and the ball on any frame of the game. You have it like really high precision in terms of like where they were, calculating their velocity from that, like just unbelievable. I have played with the free version of some Skill Corner data. They've posted some games of the Skill Corner data, which is tracking based on broadcast footage. It's so much worse.
Well,
Like it's so much worse
this is the
in
thing I
terms of
know.
accuracy and everything. It's useful, but oh my, like the difference is very palpable if you're getting into the weeds.
This is the thing I think people don't realize is like the second spectrum data is like 12 cameras across the
Yeah,
bunch.
it was surely really expensive to produce, and I'm assuming that the cost was the big thing, Kieran, that you mentioned, just because of how good it was and what they had to set up at all of the stadiums. Yeah, but I don't think it was worth it.
Yeah, I mean it's we've talked about this so much how like tracking data is kind of the next frontier of analysis that like not that we've done everything we can do with event data because that's absolutely not true, but there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in the tracking space that like it's just waiting to get in the hands of people, but these this data is so expensive to produce and it's so expensive to get and it's so like unwieldy. Like you can do an hour of Python stuff on YouTube and you can make an XG model that day. Like you cannot do an hour of Python and process track raw tracking data. So we'll get there eventually. But it's an interesting one. I'm going to toot our horn a little bit. What public resources are most helpful for evaluating teams or players? Number one, ASA, number two, FBref, and then lots of other stuff. Twitter came up on there. We don't need to talk about this one too much, but like I genuinely do think we provide stuff that you cannot get anywhere else.
I would like to know what organizations and people that read ASA, what they would like to see different and more from us.
So
What can we contribute more to the public sphere?
this is actually one thing I wish we got more of because like usually we just get people getting mad. Like we'll post the survey and they're like, why is my team bad? And it's like, I don't know, ask the other analysts. We're just reporting the results. Like, why are we in tier zero? Because your website says you have a video analyst and nobody else. And we emailed and nobody replied. I wish people would be like, I want more of this. Like, so I'm gonna we'll talk about this very briefly. Let's All Soccer, who does goalkeeper analysis stuff on Twitter, we got into a little tiff, I'll call it, about our goalkeeper model, specifically because there are some shots in our data that the post-shot recorded location is just not that close to where it actually is. And it's the reality of the data we have. And he said that I really wish that your goalkeeper model, like, fixed this in some way. And like you can disagree about how you could do it. Like we could go and check every shot ourselves. That's not realistic for a volunteer organization. But like that's a thing that like, hey, we really wish this was fixed. And it's like, okay, this is good to know. Like if we ever come up with a solution for that, amazing. And that I think I wish we got some more of. And like our feature request list on GitHub is quite long, I'm not gonna lie to you. But even things that are not like, I wish the site had this, it's like, I wish we were talking about this more. Like this survey, the analytics survey came from somebody saying, I wish like Michael Lopez used to do this for the NFL. And it was like, I wish we had this for the MLS.
I think Elliot saw that on Twitter and was like, wait, let me do something real
Yeah. Like,
quick.
I think this is the third or fourth year that we've done it now. And it's like,
It's the
that's so
second
much.
year. It's only the second.
Is it really the only second? I
Yeah,
feel like it's
I think
been.
this is only our second survey.
Maybe the tier is just like 4 years old.
Yeah, that's the one that's 4 years.
Okay.
But either way, like that's the thing. So if you're listening to this podcast, like you probably talked to us already if you're listening to this podcast. But like if there are things you want, hit us up. The most interesting thing on this
Gross.
one for me is like I'm very curious what people at teams are looking at ASA versus what the public are looking at. Like, is it just like they're looking at G plus to get like a check and balance against whatever internal position value model they have? Is it, I don't know, do they like the podcast? Like, I'd love to know that.
No, I don't
I'd
think we want
be,
to know that.
I do know for a fact that there are people at teams who listen to the podcast. So Yeah, that's that question. And then the last one I want to talk about, because we're getting a little bit long here, but I think this is cool. I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about. If you could wave a magic wand to improve analytics usage at your club, which would you choose? And the options they were given were better raw data, increased buy-in from decision makers, more staff, more third-party tools, and other. And the two answers that got the most votes, and one by far, was more staff. And we've talked about this. Somebody asked us a question when we did a Q&A a while ago about like how do you like make an analyst academy? Like how do you make like more analytics people in soccer? And I think like the difficult place to start this from, and like Ben, I'm sure you like you talked about the growth that Colorado had, like this actually is absolutely the case that it is happening right now. Like teams are hiring more and more people. San Diego are a brand new team and have like 10 analytics roles posted, and are already tier zero because they have Tyler Heaps as their chief soccer officer, who was the who worked for US Soccer and was at Monaco before. Actually was very kind and gave like a talk about how the US women's team were using analytics during COVID. He came to talk to our university team and share some fun stories. Is also engaged to Lindsey Horan. Overall, pretty cool guy. But this transition is happening now. Teams are hiring more and more people. Like Ben, I don't know if you want to talk about like how you ended up at Colorado. But like that is a story that could not have happened 8 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I ended up at Colorado is because Matt Pfeffer sent us a DM on Twitter. That's the reason. So, I mean, it's the reason I know about this is because of ASA. Like, hey, data companies, just get it out there. Like, I love how StatsBomb had always posted, they always had free data up. Like, that I think is one of the most important things that this, culture can do to push the community forward to get new people interested in it. So I think beyond that, it's just gonna have to be a matter of like I don't think you can do an analytics academy beyond sort of what we've been doing, just because it is such a it comes down to relationships. It comes down to talking. Like, our conversations will push our models more than staring at code for 10 hours. Like, you can't code academy your way to being a good soccer analyst. I really feel like it is the community that is the academy, and that is in like the public sphere is what has enabled MLS clubs to get to the point they're at. Not That's not just us. That started long before ASA was a thing and long before G Plus was out or all of that. We were simply growing alongside that. But
Twitter.
that's really the way for it. Like, we're all in this together, and I hope that the powers that control the data will understand that. Oh, and hey, MLS, do a hackathon, a yearly hackathon,
Oh my
like the
God,
big data
please.
bowl.
Yeah.
Just do it. That's the other thing you
Please.
can do.
Does the US Men's Nat or not even the US Men's Nat, but US Soccer Federation, do they not do one anymore?
That was a
Whatever happened to
one-off.
that?
They
They
used to. We
they
won
did
it.
two or three. Yeah, we were 1 or 2 years in a row. I say
Oh.
we, like ASA, we had people.
Yeah,
I
I
was
don't,
not
I
in
don't,
it.
I, yeah,
Kevin.
none of
Yeah,
us were
Ke
involved.
Kevin Mikus, Benjamin Harrison. I'm trying to think of who else.
I think Elliot was involved.
Yeah,
Yeah, Elliot
Elliot was
was.
involved.
My favorite story about this is that their prize was they won tickets to All-Star. And or that was like part of the prize. They won tickets to All Star, and Elliot wore his Save the Crew shirt to meet pre-court.
Amazing. Oh, what a legend.
Yeah, and I believe he tried to take a picture, and pre-court was like, "No, thank you." So that's pretty terrific. But no, I agree with you. I think that's like. I think for these teams, like actually one of the really difficult things is like hiring is quite hard for these roles because unless you have lots of public work product, it's really hard to like assess your competence. And public work product is very different than working in a team. Like I'm sure Ben, you felt this way that like it's an extremely different environment. So I think that's like a that's a big kind of hurdle moving forward. But at the same time, like to be clear, like we only have six teams in the bottom tier of the tier list now. And I think when we started the tier list, it was like 15 teams were in the last year.
And boy, those six teams are hearing about it on social media.
Oh, it's so funny to me to see like Portland and Montreal fans just flame their just flame their GMs and stuff.
Yeah.
So that I think is a really interesting one. And the other one was increased buy-in from decision makers, which we've kind of talked about at length already. And there's some very interesting conversations to have. There was actually Ted Knutson, now that well, I think this is like it's in his
Yeah, I think it's
Twitter.
been
It's in his
posted.
Twitter bio, so I can say it. Like, he doesn't own StatsBomb anymore. They've been sold to Huddle. He's launched a podcast and he interviewed Ravi in his first episode, and it was like really, really interesting to hear. And like, they talked about like how you run a club with data in the era of profit and sustainability regulations in the Premier League, which is like a very, very aligned with MLS, right? That's kind of everything I've got. You guys have anything else from the analytics survey that stood out that you thought was interesting?
Not that I can think of.
All right.
The one question that we didn't cover, like 15 seconds real fast, just would you increase data and or code sharing across clubs have a net positive impact on the league? I think it's kind of funny that nobody answered no, but nine definitely were unsure. It felt very coy to me.
Yeah, it's that's an interesting question because like it will never happen.
Nope, never.
However, like we said about Second Spectrum, like one of the things that's interesting about Second Spectrum is that like the baseline tools were so good. And that is like inherently a shared tool. They didn't make it. But like if we're talking about MLS already has a bunch of rules in place for like don't fight over the same player, like discovery lists. And like that's why the discovery list existed, was that so teams wouldn't negotiate against each other in terms of salary. Maybe there is some interesting scope for sharing things like that. I do think the league probably could and should do more to have like league provided stuff. Like the NHL has a league provided tracking feed for teams and for media
And so does
organizations.
NFL too, right? The next gen stats are all in-house.
Yeah. So like things like that, I think, are tremendously valuable. And they do, and in their defense, like whether we like the Sportech deal or not, like that is a league negotiated, league wide data deal. The Second Spectrum was the same thing. And I'm sure they save a bunch of money, like negotiating, like we'll get you 30 clubs in on this instead of buying piece by piece. But I think there's a lot of scope for them to do more of that. All right, well, that's it from us. No trivia today. Lots to talk about. I highly recommend you go read the survey. There's lots of really interesting quotes from some of the analysts who answered. Go check out the tier list. Really, really cool content from Elliot, as always. And there's some pretty graphs in there. Elliot makes the best visuals at ASA. I can say that pretty confidently. That's it from us. If you want to support the show, you want to support the website, we at ASA are part of the space, but we make no money. So if you want to support, the ASA Patreon is there. It's $5 a month. There's one tier. Yeah, there's lots of really fun conversations going on in there. There's people posting their work and getting feedback. And we had a really interesting conversation the other day about if you're comparing players across positions, what are the benefits of using raw G plus versus G plus above average? And it's really nice to be able to have those conversations and like not have to be stuck with just the tooltip on a website. That's it from us. We will see you all in 2 weeks. Thank you very much. And as always, enjoy the soccer.